Episode 2 of this series has probably left some of you perplexed and scratching your heads regarding the case of Hitler and Eva Braun. The evidence I presented certainly provides for the idea that perhaps the corpse of the woman burned in the Reich Chancery Garden that was discovered on the 5th of May 1945 wasn't Eva Braun after all. Or perhaps we might say that the evidence presented certainly requires more investigation before any identity can be 100% ascribed. But remembering that not one but two bodies were found, let us now turn to the burned body of the man, a body that was ascribed the identity of Adolf Hitler. So what did the Soviets actually find? The autopsy revealed the male corpse was 163 centimeters tall. In life, Adolf Hitler was 174 centimeters. The 11-centimeter discrepancy in height, and also the discrepancy in height found on the body of Eva Braun, is often explained away as fire causing a body to shrink. The male body was also not quite as badly damaged as the female's, though still unrecognizable, as the features of the face had burned away. Regarding clothing, the Soviets recovered a few unburned parts of a yellow singlet worn as underwear. The fire had badly burned the right side of the chest and abdomen, exposing the internal organs. On examining the genitals, only one testicle was discovered. Though pathologists explored the inguinal canal, a second testicle was not found, indicating that the man had suffered from a condition called monocordism, that is, born with only one testicle. So perhaps the wartime song was right. The right arm was badly charred. The left arm was less damaged. The legs were charred and the bones partially burned. The right thigh bone and shin bone were both fractured. Pathologists thought this could have been done post-mortem, perhaps when the corpse was being moved. However, the corpse's left foot was missing, and it was not found, despite searching for it. This was confusing to the pathologists because they knew that an open petrol fire would not have reached the over 1,000 degrees Celsius necessary to burn right through a human tibia. The Soviets were apparently suspicious that the left foot had been amputated at some point, but came to no firm conclusion regarding this missing left foot due to fire damage of the affected areas. The corpse's head was intact, except for part of the occipital bone missing from the back of the skull. In the missing section, the burned brain and its membranes were visible. The right side of the head was less fire damaged. This is very important, because this is the area we need to focus on, because we are told that Hitler shot himself in the right temple using a pistol, and also probably, according to most witnesses, crunched down on a cyanide capsule at the same moment. The Soviets found no evidence of a gunshot wound in the right side of the head. The corpse's face was mostly burned away, but the upper and lower jaws were intact, as well as the nasal bones and sinuses. So turning to the all-important teeth, the upper jaw contained a large gold bridge consisting of 9 teeth. It would have been attached to the jaw by pins on the second left and second right incisors. There is some confusion in the Soviet report as to whether this bridge was found fixed to the corpse's jaw, was loose but still attached, or was completely free inside the mouth. This is extremely important if we are to consider the idea of some kind of fraud in this case. The upper jaw was full of small cracks caused by heat damage, and was badly charred, with a burnt tongue still in place. The upper and lower jaw bones were apparently shown to Fritz Echtmann, Dr. Hugo Blaschke's chief technician, who made all the gold bridge works for Blaschke's patients, including Hitler and many other top Nazis, and to Käthe Heusemann, Blaschke's dental assistant. Both witnesses recognized the jaw bones as Hitler's, that is at least what the Soviets stated in 1945. However, Heusemann certified in 1972 that she wasn't shown Hitler's actual jaws with teeth, which would have been cut out of the skull, but only the gold bridge from the upper jaw, which she immediately identified as Hitler's. She believed the Soviets had recovered the bridge work loose in the corpse's mouth. Soviet evidence of how much faith they placed in Heusermann's knowledge of the teeth of Adolf Hitler is confirmed by the testimony of Dr. Shakharovsky, one of the pathologists who told Soviet author Lev Bezeminsky that Heusermann, quote, described minutely the specific features of Hitler's dental prosthesis and drew them with her own hand. I even started to argue with her because I had overlooked one detail when examining the teeth and had miscounted the steel pins. She turned out to be right, end quote. The 9-tooth gold bridge had at some point been sawed through and then repaired. Though Blaschke had two sets of any bridge work made for his important patients, in October 1944 it was recorded that Blaschke had to saw through Hitler's bridge whilst he was wearing it, as the Führer had developed an abscess underneath it. Blaschke then repaired the damaged bridge in the mouth rather than using the spare one. The corpse's lower jaw was found free in the oral cavity, the attaching ligaments having burned away. There appeared to be some evidence of recent tooth extraction in the lower jaw, due to ragged edges where the teeth had originally been. The Soviets again were at a loss to explain this, as they knew that Hitler had had no teeth extracted in the last weeks of life. Also, two charred prongs of dental roots were found on the jaw's front surface. On the left side of the lower jaw was a bridge of 6 teeth. On the right side of the jaw, a strange gold bridge was attached to the canine with a second bicuspid and molar by a distinctive connecting gold bar going behind the intact first premolar. Echtmann and Heusermann both identified these bridges as well as having belonged to Hitler. Though the Soviets found dental cards for Hitler in the Reich Chancellery Dental Office showing that this work was done in 1934, the year before the dentist Hugo Blaschke took over Hitler's treatment. Both Dr. Blaschke to the Americans and Käthe Heusermann to the Soviets noted that the left central incisor of Hitler's upper jaw bridge, the so-called window crown, had left an island of enamel a discoloured dark brown colour. The Soviets found the same discoloration on the same tooth on the bridge they found in the corpse. Therefore, either an exceptionally detailed fraud was perpetrated, or else the bridge work was indeed Hitler's. The corpse had very few remaining natural teeth, 4 lower incisors and 1 right bicuspid. It wasn't until 1972 that it became possible to compare the 1945 Soviet autopsy findings, published in the West only in 1968, against a second set of evidence for Hitler's dentition. In 1972, at the US National Archives in Washington, D.C., an envelope of X-rays was discovered, purportedly X-rays of Hitler's head taken in October 1944 on the orders of Dr. Theodor Morell, Hitler's personal physician. The X-rays are indeed of all one person, and they show a male skull with extensive dental bridge work. The bridge work compares very well with Hitler's bridge work, as demonstrated by Blaschke and the other witnesses. The X-rays were used at the time to create a simple computer model. However, although the consensus was that the X-rays matched with the bridge work found in the burned corpse, and the corpse was identified as being Adolf Hitler's, the possibility of forensic fraud was not entirely ruled out. Remember, spare sets of all Hitler's bridges were kept in the Reich Chancellery Dental Office. In order for a convincing fraud to have been perpetrated, a skilled dentist or dental technician would have been needed to be involved. The duplicate bridges would have to have been forensically altered to precisely match the actual bridges fixed into Hitler's real mouth. So the sawed-through bridge discovered would have to have been an exact recreation of the real sawed-through bridge, and the discoloured area on the crown and the upper jaw bridge likewise perfectly copied. A forensic fraud was not impossible, but the likelihood of it having been done has little supporting evidence. Such a complex fraud would only have been attempted if the real Hitler was still alive and had escaped. If Hitler was dead, such a fraud would have been much easier. His real bridge work could have been removed from his mouth and placed loose inside the mouth of the burned corpse. Why? Perhaps because the SS determined that Hitler's real body would never be found, and instead a faked-up body left for the Soviets to find, to prevent a more thorough search. Hitler himself is recorded as having ordered his closest aides to ensure that his body was never found by the Soviets and displayed.
Did he give you any last orders?
Yes, to destroy his personal possessions and burn his body.
Did you carry them out?
Yes, I used petrol, but there was so a flush that they were not completely burned.
Where do you think Hellinger Hitler's body is now?
Buried in the park of the Chancellery. Mm. The Russians have never found Hitler's body. I know that because they questioned me repeatedly about it.
You think it's still there?
Yes, buried in a common grave.
Such a simple fraud, as I've outlined, would be possible, meaning that Hitler's real body was indeed never found. We'll return to this fascinating theory later in this series. If we accept the X-rays found in the US National Archives as real, and most people do, then it is a very good chance that what we are looking at is the burned body of Adolf Hitler. Actually, using the expression looking at is a misnomer, for the Soviets have never released a single autopsy photograph of their detailed examinations of the corpses of the burned man and woman, which is very strange when you think about it. However, there are some other problems. If you remember, when we discussed the corpse's head, the Soviets noted that no gunshot wound was found on the right side, to match with the numerous witness testimonies concerning Hitler's suicide on the afternoon of the 30th of April 1945 in his sitting room in the bunker beneath the Reich Chancery Garden.
He made plans to take poison and at the same time shoot himself with his pistol.
It has always struck me as somewhat ludicrous to suggest that Hitler could have shot himself, as the witness statements of many professionals, including medical professionals that observed him towards the end of his life close up, and of film evidence shown here, all shows that Hitler was suffering from some kind of shaking palsy, and was having extreme difficulty in preventing his hands from flapping around all over the place. Medical observers at the time, and subsequently over the past 78 years, have come to the conclusion that Hitler was suffering from Parkinson's disease or a very similar neurological disorder. Secondly, if Hitler, who was right-handed, had successfully shot himself in the right temple, as widely reported and accepted, blood and brain tissue would have been ejected from the exit wound all over the wall behind the sofa on which he died. Yet this area is often ignored by writers, and we will see later that the Soviets themselves launched a thorough investigation into trying to find evidence for such a gunshot wound in the room where the man was supposed to have died. Interestingly, the Soviets did find the crushed remnants of an SS-manufactured cyanide ampule in the corpse's mouth. However, when the corpse was dissected, no smell of bitter almonds or chemical traces of cyanide compounds were found in the brain, lungs, or the intestines, exactly like the corpse of the burned woman later called Eva Braun. This placed the Soviets in a bit of a predicament. Such toxicological tests performed on Magda Goebbels and her children had all turned up positive for cyanide in the brain, lungs, and/or intestines. The Soviets tested the burned man's corpse several times over several days, but apart from the mouth, no evidence of cyanide compounds could be found elsewhere on the body. However, just like the case of the female burned body, the Soviet Commission decided the following. Quote, "The presence in the oral cavity of the remains of a crushed glass ampule and other similar ampules in the oral cavity of other bodies, the marked smell of bitter almonds emanating from the bodies, and the forensic chemical tests of internal organs which establish the presence of cyanide compounds permit the Commission to arrive at the conclusion that in this instant death was caused by poisoning with cyanide compounds." End quote. Leaving aside the bombshell Soviet conclusion that Hitler died due to cyanide poisoning and not to pistol shot, the Commission's conclusion, like that of Eva Braun's, or the body they called Eva Braun's, is hardly conclusive, as their own medical evidence cast this conclusion into doubt. Although the bridge work of Adolf Hitler was definitely found in the mouth of the corpse, and identified as such by their prisoners, Echtmann and Heusermann, it remains unclear if one or more of the bridges found were properly fitted, or whether in fact all three of them were loose in the mouth, leaving the possibility, however unlikely, of a fraud having been perpetrated, perhaps by Hitler's own staff for some nefarious reason. You can probably understand why Stalin, who was following this case extremely closely, despite his scientists' positive identification of the corpses of Hitler and his wife, remains suspicious of the findings. In episode 2, I mentioned that Schmersch had, in addition to the burned corpses of a man and a woman, also recovered the unburned but buried bodies of two dogs close by, a small black dog and a grey-brown Alsatian bitch. These animals were carefully examined by forensic pathologists. The black dog had had a cyanide capsule crushed in its jaws and then been shot in the head by someone standing above it. The Alsatian had been killed only by a cyanide ampule. The Soviets noticed that the way the glass ampules had been broken in the dog's mouths were exactly the same as the ways the cyanide ampules had been broken in the mouths of the burned man and woman, that is, crushed once, producing two broken pieces. Witnesses stated that SS Dr. Werner Haser, one of the SS doctors, who remained in the bunker till the end, on Hitler's orders, crushed a cyanide ampule in Hitler's Alsatian bitch Blondie's mouth using long forceps, with the assistance of Hitler's army dog handler Sergeant Fritz Tornow, holding Blondie's jaws shut until the animal expired. Why? Because Hitler was worried that cyanide ampules supplied to him by Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, who had been officially disgraced days before after Hitler discovered his secret negotiations with the Western Allies, might not work. He ordered one tested on his loyal dog, also ensuring that Blondie wouldn't fall into Soviet hands and be maltreated. Interestingly, this little scene makes more sense if Hitler was going to use cyanide rather than pistol to finish himself, particularly when we take into consideration Hitler's neurological disorder causing extreme tremors in his hands. To the Soviets, the similarity in the condition of the broken cyanide capsules in the mouths of the dogs and the burned man and woman found close by raised some eyebrows. You can perhaps understand the implications of such a similarity, particularly if you consider that the cyanide ampules found in the mouth of Magda Goebbels and her children were all crushed up, as in the death throes of cyanide poisoning, involuntary chewing and gnashing occurs, meaning that the glass ampules were crushed into many fragments. Stalin was unsatisfied by the medical identifications of Hitler and Eva Braun, and commissioned a special report in late summer 1945 on Hitler's death. It was completed on the 19th of January 1946, its name, Operation Myth. The report criticized Schmersch officers for the manner in which they had investigated the Reich Chancellery site in May 1945, and for being too indulgent towards German witnesses. Stalin's skepticism genuinely frightened many senior NKVD officials who now feared for their jobs and perhaps even for their lives. Two camps had formed in the NKVD. One faction held to the post-mortem finding of the original report to have proved, by the dental evidence alone, that they had found Hitler's body. The other camp criticized the initial investigation, calling into question the competence of those involved in it. Stalin appears to have believed that the forensic data, the postmortems of the burned bodies, revealed a forensic fraud and that Hitler had somehow escaped. A new group of forensic scientists that looked into the deaths stated that there had been no cyanide poisoning. The ampules found in the mouths of the burned man and woman were part of a forensic fraud. Stalin believed the corpse was not Hitler's. All the Germans had said that Hitler had shot himself in the head and may also have taken cyanide. Therefore, the NKVD must find evidence. New rounds of interrogations were made. 8 former bunker occupants, including Hitler's pilot, SS General Hans Bauer, and Hitler's valet, SS Lieutenant Colonel Heinz Linger, were interrogated at length in mammoth sessions lasting 8 or 9 hours each time. The NKVD was searching forensically for cracks in the established story of Hitler's final hours, death and cremation by those of his closest associates that the Red Army had actually captured, who had witnessed Hitler's last hours in detail. Heinz Linger stood out as suspicious. The Soviets placed each prize prisoner in a freezing cold cell with another German prisoner, the second actually being an NKVD plant, hoping to catch the witnesses out in between interrogation sessions. Linger told his fake German cellmate several times that he would not crack under NKVD interrogation. He also said that only he and Martin Bormann know the truth of what happened at Hitler's death. Though Linger was supposed to have seen Hitler seconds after he had shot himself, he could never properly describe the wound to Hitler's head in detail. He was vague, and in private told his cellmate the strangest thing, all recorded by the NKVD. Quote, "They asked me again about the bullet hole, and as to whether there were any traces of blood on the clothes. I replied I had noticed a patch of blood on the right temple, a red dot, not exceeding the size of 3 stamps. I don't know whether it was in reality a bullet hole. This stain could also have been painted on." End quote. Make of that what you will. By the way, initially, Linger said that the bloodstain was on the left side of Hitler's head. Linger also couldn't remember who carried Eva Braun up to the Reich Chancellery garden from the bunker. Perhaps it's not surprising that the NKVD believed that Linger had in fact shot Hitler, most probably on the orders of Martin Bormann. Whatever happened in that bunker room, the NKVD officer in charge of Linger wrote in the report, quote, "I personally never heard of a single case when the husband and wife committed suicide using different methods. Neither can one possibly imagine both peacefully seated on a sofa together." End quote. The ruthless and exhausting interrogations of the 8 main bunker witnesses, though they produced some interesting comments, the aforementioned Linger being the prize example, did not actually break open the case for the Soviets. Overall, the witnesses stuck to the original story we all know today. In the next episode, the NKVD returns to the bunker to conduct forensic tests and reconstructions to try to establish what precisely happened there on the afternoon of the 30th of April 1945. What they found is both fascinating and disturbing.